Hello, everybody. It is Wednesday, the 28th of March, and we're really excited today because Stephanie and I have Andrew Janz on. He's running against Devin Nunes in California. So we're both really excited to talk to him and hear what he has to say. And just say hi, Stephanie. I'm just going to let you take over.
Sure. Well, hi, everybody. This is so exciting for me because Andrew is one of those people that I think is going to change things for Americans, for Californians, and for people who to whom decency and dignity is important. But I'm going to read a little blurb about Andrew because you got to know who he is in case you don't know who he is. So Andrew Janz was raised in Visalia. He was the son of immigrants. He's committed his life to public service. And after law school, Andrew returned home and became a prosecutor for Fresno County. Now he's running, as Kimberly said, for Congress in California's District 22, the very district over which Dirty Devin Nunes presides. I had to throw the dirty in. I had to. Andrew's experience as a successful deputy district attorney and deep ties to Fresno and Tulare counties make him an ideal candidate to take on Devin Nunes this November. Andrew, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Stephanie. Hi, Kimberly. Thanks for having me on today. This is exciting.
Oh, welcome. We are just like over the moon to have you.
Over the moon to talk to the dude that's gonna help change things, as I said earlier. I want to ask you, Andrew, about your fundraising efforts. And you have raised more money than any other Democrat running for Congress in the country, with the exception of Connor Lamb. And that was kind of a nail biter, but that was a balls to the wall experience where all of us, you know, threw down what we could to just have Connor take over. But with you coming from District 22 in California, how is it that you were able to generate all of this income for your campaign?
Stephanie, look, I think that our message is starting to resonate. I think that people here locally are starting to pay attention. They're excited about the prospect of having someone challenge a 15-term, 8-term incumbent. He's been there for 15 years. He's done little or nothing for our district. And so people are excited. And I think nationally, I think people are hungry for a change. People want good people in government. And if this administration tells you anything, you know, that there's a lack of morals and ethics in Washington today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Without question.
I have a question. So if candidates like you can raise that much money, why do you think so many people on the left are upset about Citizens United?
Great question. You know, early on, I took the pledge. Connor Lamb and I did it very early on in this election cycle, and we took a pledge not to take any corporate PAC money. And I think we need to set an example for the rest of the nation. We need to set an example for other candidates running for Congress and other offices, because when you take money from corporations, those are the folks that really own you. And corporations and special interest groups are one single thing stopping folks in Washington from doing the right thing and voting in favor of their constituents' interests. So the Citizens United decision, I think, was terrible. I think that it's allowed this dark money to be so involved and pervasive in politics. So I've taken the pledge. We're raising money $20, $30, $40 at a time. Our average contribution is around $40. These are from normal working class individuals all across the country, and we're very excited about that.
Andrew, you know, we met a while back. I'm involved in a parents activist group here in the East Bay in California, and we were looking for candidates in California in flippable districts, people that we could be close enough, you know, literally drive to your district and help you in any way. We reached out to several, and you and your campaign manager, Heather Grevin, were the most responsive, and getting to know you, seeing what you're about has been such an inspiring, it's kind of an overused word, but the experience has been very inspiring because I think many people see politicians as inaccessible. How can I get close to these people who are representing me and my voice? And in the case of the folks of District 22, you know, their voices. What is this going to be your approach moving forward? You know, you're this person who sat at my kitchen table and talked about how you're going to change things for the people of District 22. Do you see, are you going to remain close to your constituents when you take this seat from Devon?
Absolutely. Devon Nunes hasn't held a town hall since 2010.
Wow.
And I've seen politicians all around the country refusing to hold town hall meetings. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because they're scared. They're scared and they know that they're not representing the interests of their voters. And so they go into hiding. And so what I've done over the course of the last 10 months or so being in this race is to make sure that I'm out there every single day. I post all of my public events on my website, on Facebook, and on Twitter. And so people know where to find me. And this is the way that I'm going to conduct myself as a member of Congress. And I've been so excited and humbled to see the outpouring that you had mentioned. I've been traveling the state as well to get help for my district, because we're traditionally one of the more underserved districts, I believe, in the state of California. And there are many folks, including the great folks that I met at your house, Stephanie, that want to just get involved. And, you know, I'm very excited to see all the people. You know, I traveled the coast a couple weeks ago from Monterey up to San Jose. And we got a ton of volunteers to sign up to come out to the district, to phone bank, to do postcard writing, to go knock on doors. So people are really excited about this race. And, you know, this, I guess, is some advice for other candidates that are running across the country. You know, put yourself out there, be accessible, and people will respond.
I have a question, and this pertains to the March for Our Lives. But it's the kids. I mean, I know in District 22, that's a historically conservative Republican district. And, you know, progressive issues don't usually resonate there, but we are seeing cultural changes happen there and across the country with issues like gun control. So I'm curious to know a couple of different things. I'd like to know what you think the people of District 22 think of the March for Our Lives, but I also want to know, what do you think that these kids, what kind of impact do you think these children, because they really are children, are going to have on lawmakers and congressional representatives? Because it appears to me, and I'm a voting rights activist. I wrote a book for women on the importance of voting, although it could be for men too, but specifically focusing on women. So I think it's so incredibly important to engage, to be informed and to engage in every single election. But I think that these children are changing the way that people are viewing politics, because they are saying all the things that, I mean, a lot of us have been saying for a while, but it just seems to have fallen on deaf ears, in that, you know, we've got to vote, that elected officials work for us and all this. So how do you see, it's like, what do you think the people of District 22 think of the March for Our Lives and gun control? And then how do you think that these kids are going to shape politics moving forward?
Kimberly, I grew up in this district, and I can tell you that traditionally it has been a pretty conservative district, especially with respect to gun ownership. And I can tell you, growing up here, being a gun owner myself, that this is going to be a very tough issue to talk about in the district. And I can tell you that the folks here in the district are very proud of the fact that responsible gun ownership is something that's so important. It's something that you teach your children as you grow up, and sort of what I was taught. And so seeing these kids out there, I think, is such a great thing. I mean, we've seen so many tragedies over the years in places like Parkland, Virginia Tech, Sandy Hook, Columbine. And we see our politicians and the adults in Washington really failing our younger generation. So I'm so proud to stand with these young students and see them step up for the first time. And I think an effective approach that they are utilizing is a nonpartisan approach. I was out there this weekend at the march, and speaker after speaker had talked about how this isn't a red versus blue issue. This isn't a Democrat versus Republican issue. This is an issue about safety and responsibility. And so I don't buy into this argument from the far right that says that we can't have a discussion about responsible gun ownership and meaningful gun safety reform. I think that these students have created a platform for others around the country, especially our lawmakers in Washington, to begin to talk about what we need to do to keep our children, our schools, and our communities safe. I'm a prosecutor. I work in the violent crimes unit, and there's nobody else here in Fresno County that sees the impact of gun violence on a daily basis like I do. And I've worked on so many cases where I've seen families and young people have their lives destroyed because of gun violence, drive-by shootings, and things like that. So we need to do more. We need to get these guns off the streets. There are simple legislative fixes I think that we could use. We need universal background checks to make sure that folks that are a danger to themselves and their communities don't have access to these firearms. And then from a gun owner's perspective, we need to have better training for people that own these weapons. There are so many cases that I've been assigned where guns were used in the commission of a crime, where the gun was stolen or taken away in some way from a person who lawfully possessed a firearm. So we need to do things around the issue of gun lockers and things like that. I really think that we need to raise the age from 18 to 21. I think it's insane that you can't have a drink until you're 21, but you can buy a weapon of mass destruction at age 18.
Yeah.
So I think these kids are doing a great job. We need to let them continue to be front and center in this, and we need to continue to make sure that this is a bipartisan issue, and we don't let partisan politics sort of interfere in what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
I think that, I mean, so well said. Another thing I will say about these kids is I have a teenager myself, and I made him sit with me and watch the speeches from the March for Our Lives event on Saturday. And I said, you are part of a movement, whether you realize it or not, but your voice is being heard now. And the beauty of kids is they're so committed. They've got nothing to lose, and they don't ever give up. It's like a dog on a pant leg. You know, they will not stop. And it's beautiful. And it resonated with him at that moment. You know, gun violence has not touched his life, but it is in our community. We live in Oakland. This is a very real issue. And if something doesn't change, and if we don't get people in office like yourself, Andrew, with sensible gun reform, with a sensible gun reform agenda, you know, I might have to leave, honestly. I want to stay on the local topics because, you know, you are getting a ton of attention because of Devin Nunes's ties to Russia, right? But all politics are local, and in your district, water is a very important issue. How do you balance the national interest in your race with the local issues that are of vital importance to your constituents in District 22.
Stephanie, water, you're right, is the number one issue here in the Central Valley. We're an agricultural region. We take great pride in the fact that we feed the rest of the nation. And many people here, including myself, view the ability to feed our own nation as a vital national security issue. And as you know, California has been in a 6-year drought. Mm-hmm. Last year, we had pretty good rainfall. The problem was we weren't able to store and maintain that water. We weren't able to use that water to recharge our groundwater aquifers. We sent billions of gallons of water out to the ocean, not for any environmental purpose, but just because simply there wasn't enough storage capacity here in the Central Valley. And that got a lot of people here locally upset because we know how valuable and rare water is for the Central Valley. So what I've been talking about is the need to invest and create better water infrastructure for above and below ground water storage. And the way I talk about this issue in the district is to point out the fact that Democrats have traditionally been the party of big ideas and big projects. You go back to FDR. He got us out of the Great Depression by investing in these types of major projects, building roads and bridges and tunnels and dams. So we need to have a similar type of approach here, I believe, in the Central Valley. And so with respect to your question regarding the Russia issue and trying to balance that with local issues, look, while Devin's in Washington focused on protecting Donald Trump, while he's focused on undermining the Robert Mueller investigation, while he's attacking federal law enforcement agencies, the issues back home are being forgotten. And mm-hmm. every day I'm out there and I'm talking to Democrats and Republicans alike who just want him to come home and focus on the issues that matter. Because he's been there for, as I said before, 15 years and 8 terms. He's done nothing for his district. He's done nothing for his constituents, which is probably why he's refusing to meet with them and why he hasn't had a town hall in 7 years.
Exactly.
You know, Andrew, I just want to say that I recently moved to Washington, D.C., actually last month. I had lived in California, Los Angeles, from 1977 until 2009, and then I moved up to Northern California and just recently moved to D.C. And the reason I moved to D.C. was family, basically, to be closer to my aging parents and all of that. My mother also moved from Northern California to the D.C. area last year. So now all of my, I originally was from Baltimore, so all of my family is here. So it just kind of made sense. But I'm bringing this up because last October, you know, living in Northern California was involved in that firestorm. And it was horrifying and so scary. And I think, you know, the fire came within 4 miles of where I lived. For a week, I didn't have water. I didn't have electricity. And one of the things that I thought of when I moved to the East Coast was there was kind of a relief because I know of all the issues with the water, and you talking about water infrastructure is so incredibly important because, you know, we've got the president of Nestle who believes that water is not a human right, and, you know, moving towards privatization, I can never say that word, of water freaks me out. The whole idea of not being able to turn my water on in the middle of the day on a Tuesday because, you know, water rationing, where there are times of days when you can't turn on your water because it's turned off for a certain period of time in order to conserve. And that was always something that really scared me. So I'm so glad to hear that you're taking that on. As a former California resident, it's so incredibly important. I'm wondering, I have a question real quick. Would it all be with the water infrastructure plans? Is it all about rainwater, or is it about turning like ocean water, you know, desalinization and all that?
Yeah, we're taking an all of the above approach here. And so desalinization is definitely an option. It's historically been very expensive.
Yes.
And I'm concerned, extremely concerned about the impacts of desalinization on the environment as well. But I think that it's a type of technology that we need to invest in. I use Israel as an example sometimes because Israel has a similar climate to California, and they're very good about their water policy. And there is a completely different, point of view related to water there. You know, they treat water like gold. And I think so we need to have a culture change here in California. Yeah. And in the rest of the country, because water is so precious, it's so valuable. And, you know, we need to do better to make sure that people understand that. So I want to make sure that we use sort of an all of the above strategy approach. We need to use new types of technologies with respect to irrigating our crops. And we sometimes need to have better decision making when it comes to the types of crops that we decide to plant.
Very cool.
Speaking of crops, I know that it's amazing. And this is a fresh idea, which is crazy to even say that hasn't been a priority in this state for, you know, decades upon decades. But this is why we need you. Just another reason why we need Drew for 22, Drew for California, Drew for America. But speaking of crops, you know, as an agricultural district, are these farmers pissed off yet? Like, I can't believe we're not hearing more. It's like, these are the people, like you said, they're feeding our nation, and they're being forgotten by the very person that has represented them for the last 15 years. How is that? How is that possible? Who do I need to talk to? I mean, honestly, Andrew, this is your moment. And are you talking to furious farmers?
Stephanie, I get so frustrated about this issue. When I got into this race, I had talked to a group of farmers that were very shocked to see that I am in favor of water, as if water was something that I didn't like. And historically, you know, Devin Nunes has historically done a very good job about by blaming others. For all the stuff that's going wrong here in the Central Valley, including the issue of water. So if you look at any of the mailers, any of his public speeches, he talks about how Democrats are to blame, how Democrats in San Francisco and in Sacramento are the ones that are preventing the water from getting here to the Central Valley. And so every, you know, 3 or 4 years, he'll sponsor or put out a water bill. It doesn't go anywhere in Congress. And he sort of throws up his hands and says, well, I tried my best. It's somebody else's fault. And then he goes on to the next thing. And so what I've been doing over the last 5 or 6 months is going out there and talking to the farmers, letting them know that water is one of my main priorities and that I'm going to work hard every day to make sure that we get the water security necessary to water our fields and to support our communities here locally. And so what I'm going to be doing between now and November is a massive voter education effort to let people know that what Devin has been doing over the past 15 years has been insufficient, and he's not trying very hard, and he's blaming others. So it's all about getting out there and meeting folks. You know, farmers are also concerned about, and I think you might have been going here a little bit later in the interview, but I guess we can go there now, Trump's policies on tariffs and how that's going to impact crops and our ability to export these fruits and vegetables and nuts to other countries. You know, China is one of the biggest consumers of these goods. And so this is going to be a real pocketbook issue for our local farmers. And many of them have expressed their concerns to me, many of which are coming over on board to support my campaign and for the first time in years go against Devin Nunes.
That is so good to hear. Mm-hmm. You got, you hit people in their pocketbooks. I remember driving through your district and seeing signs that said, the Democrats are why there's no water. They shut the water off. We can't grow our crops, you know, in the middle of a super dry field right off of Highway 5 or you know, wherever, right? And what's happening here is your district is being represented by someone who couldn't give two hoots, who's up to his eyeballs in this Russia scandal, and whether or not, you know, he's going to jail, for crying out loud, we don't know. But it's about time this conversation is had. And when you're talking about people who can't put food on the table for their own families because China no longer wants their goods, now we're talking. Now the gloves are off, and I'm really happy to hear you addressing this, and to address this trade war thing. So let's talk more about, how you plan to represent the people of your district. How will you lead them if you are in office? When you are in office.
Yeah, like what are the main issues that you focus on primarily?
Well, I think the starting point is to provide the voters of the district, the constituents, access to their elected member of Congress. So I pledged very early on to take and do at least 2 town halls a year, one in the north part of the district, one in the south part. You know, I did a town hall a couple weeks ago where Democrats and Republicans came together. There were close to 300 people there. And everybody was civil. We didn't agree on everything, but we had a vibrant conversation. We were able to talk about the issues that mattered to people. And it was a way for me to gain an understanding of what voters care about. And, you know, it's the issues that they care about are the issues that everybody all across the country cares about. Putting water aside, people are really concerned about health care. Mm-hmm. They're concerned about the economy and jobs. They're concerned about immigration reform, which has a disproportionate impact on the folks that live in my district, and agribusiness's ability to recruit labor and people to work the fields. And so these are the issues that I'm focused on. Public safety is a major issue. As a prosecutor, I can tell you that there are 20,000 active gang members in Fresno County alone. And the last couple of weeks, we've seen a gang war in the south part of the district. And so we don't have the adequate funding, I think, to ensure that our communities are safe. education is a priority, and so I want to make sure that we're out there and we're talking about all of these issues, because for far too long I feel like the people that have lived here in the Central Valley, our communities, have really been sort of second place to the rest of the rest of the state and the rest of the country, and I want to be a champion for our region. I want to be somebody that can go to Washington and push my region, as opposed to pushing myself, which is what my opponent is doing, and moving up very quickly in the House of Representatives amongst leadership rank. That's why he's chairman now, and that's why he's Trump's lapdog.
That's right, because all he cares about is the title. He's form over substance without question, this guy. Andrew, do you see yourself... when you get to Congress, like, what committees or committee would you want to be a part of, and where do you see your talents and your experience taking you and doing the most for not just the people of your district in California, but, you know, you do as an elected federal official have a responsibility to pushing an agenda forward that's good for all Americans.
Stephanie, it's a good question. To be honest with you, I haven't put much thought into it, just because I'm just so so engrossed in what we're doing now and trying to win in November. But if I had to take my pick of committees, I mean, definitely I need to be on the Ag Committee, because that issue is just so important to my constituents. But obviously, given my background as a prosecutor, I think that I could be of great service on House Judiciary, or maybe even the Ethics Committee.
We need
change in Washington. We need good people, good ethical people, to sit on these committees, which I think, you know, there's a vacuum there right now, and we need.
Oh yeah. Well, Andrew, you are such a fresh breath of fresh air, I should say. You know, you bring experience, commitment, honesty, ethics, all of that. You are truly someone who's lived it. You're gonna, you know, you can represent your people probably better than anybody else in that district. I know, certainly better than the guy that's there now. How can folks listening to this podcast now support you and help you further your wonderful agenda?
Yeah, support and find you.
Well, I'm very active on Twitter, Jans for Congress. And then if you want to visit my website, it's AndrewJansForCongress.com, or you can go to RemoveNunez.com. And my last name is spelled J-A-N-Z.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm just grateful that you're running, and I appreciate the fact that you're kind of, it seems to me, running the same kind of campaign that we've been seeing with grassroots candidates across the country who have won. And I'm very hopeful for obvious reasons, outside of the fact that Devin Nunes is such a horrible congressional representative, doesn't show up to any town meetings, isn't available to his constituents. But beyond that, I'm grateful that people like you, who I believe are true patriots and truly care about voters, are, you know, just leading the way. It's exciting to me to watch this. And the one thing that I'm really hopeful about, it's not even a question so much, is just that there's so much energy right now with, you know, all of the grassroots across the country, candidates, whether, you know, Democratic candidates. I just hope that everybody who's elected this year is able to find ways to keep that momentum going and not get comfortable when things feel great, because I think that one of the problems that we experienced in this country is having Obama as president led so many Democrats to feel a certain measure of safety. And because he was unable to miraculously change everything to make it perfect overnight when he was first inaugurated, I think that a lot of people turned on him because they're impatient and they didn't understand that, you know, he was working with a lot, and what he did in a way was miraculous. It just didn't happen in 5 minutes. And the result, I think, was a poor voter outcome for both midterms while he was president. And I just, you know, I hope and I want to, I guess I want to ask that, you know, you take that into consideration when you do win, that, you know, every election is so important, whether you're running for that particular election or not, to kind of like get people excited and get people feeling like there's a reason to vote, because people who are comfortable tend not to vote. So there's my two cents.
No, thank you, Kimberly. No, that that means a lot. And I promise that I will continue being energetic and getting my constituents excited and fired up about what we're doing and involved. And let me say this to both you, Kimberly and Stephanie. I think this is an important time for journalism, and I'm so glad that you're spotlighting different races all across the country, including mine. And I think now more than ever, we need good journalists out there that are paying attention and holding people accountable and educating voters and helping candidates be able to tell their story. So thank you so much for what you all do. And it was a pleasure for me to be on today.
Well, thank you so much.
You're a pleasure. Andrew Jans for Congress.
Yes, so don't forget, everybody, it is his Twitter handle is Jans, J-A-N-Z, for Congress, and that's F-O-R, Congress. So follow him. You can find AndrewJansForCongress.com. Support him. You know, send him what you can. He's wonderful, and we got to get Devin out and Andrew in. So thank you, Andrew. This was a fascinating conversation.
Thank you, Kimberly. Thank you, Stephanie.
Thank you, Andrew.
Woohoo! And now Stephanie and I, maybe we can talk about Andrew a little bit. But we're also in a few minutes going to head on over to our and another thing, which is subscription only. And that's if you want to hear what we're going to be talking about, you got to support the show, which is $5 a month. $5 a month, and you'll get to hear our
nothing.
I know you'll get. I mean, that's like a drink at Starbucks. But we're going to talk about in the next segment. We're going to talk about Stormy. We're going to talk about Roseanne, the new show Roseanne. There's. I also teased everybody yesterday with. I wrote the first chapter. I think it's going to be. Who the hell knows where we'll actually go? But I mean, I finally got something out for my book. And so the tease was that it was about this situation that I had dating.
Are we gonna let Andrew go?
Oh, I thought that he was gone.
Oh no, he's not gone yet. Oh. He's still here. Okay, hang on.
Bye, Andrew. This is the part where it gets crazy. This is where you might not appreciate the journalism. Just kidding.
Okay. Bye, everyone.
Bye. I'm sorry about that. Sorry about that.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. Oh, well, you know, this is a casual podcast.
While I'm here, I want to, now that Andrew's gone, it's important to note that there is a primary. There is a Democratic primary in that district in the 22nd.
There you go.
And so I think there are five other Democrats running against Andrew. But the guy that everyone's watching is Andrew. So
right.
Looks like his chances are pretty good.
Oh, is he talking to you or Drew?
No, I'm talking. Oh, I didn't have this turned up so you could hear it, Steph. So I was just saying to everybody that there's a primary. There's a Democratic primary in June, I believe it is.
June, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. There are other Democrats to choose from. I just want to make that perfectly clear. So that's all.
Yeah, but Andrew's the best.
Yes, and yeah. So we just want to make sure that people understand where he stands. Go to his website. Look up the candidates. He's very strong. And you're going to have, I think, four or five choices for other candidates. And you just need to know that the primary is coming up in June.
Yeah, June 5th.
June 5th.
I've spent a lot of time working with Andrew and his crew, and my activist group is, we're committed to him. And we vetted the other options, and we liked where he was coming from most. He's got a really interesting story. I mean, you know, touched on it in the intro, but he, you know, his father met his mother while his father was serving in the Peace Corps, and his father was in Thailand, met the mom. They came back to Fresno. These are blue collar people who worked in Fresno County, raised their son who went to a California State University and then went on to get his law degree and came back to District 22. It doesn't get any more committed than that. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like this is a young man. He's married, you know, he'll, I'm sure, go on to raise a family in his district, but he is putting in the time and he knows where these people are coming from. This is, and he speaks to them on all, you know, all aspects.
Yeah.
Of the, you know, every issue that arises in District 22, from gun violence to gangs to education to water rights to farming and all of it. I mean, he really does speak to all of the issues that are of importance to not just Democrats, but human beings. And it's really a beautiful thing to watch. Anyway.
Well, I'm just glad I hate the fact that Trump is president and he's horrible and he scares me. And obviously I'm not alone, but at least we have, coming from his presidency, we have people like Jance, we have people like Jess Phoenix, we have people like Randy Bryce, who are stepping it up in a way that we haven't seen in a long time. You know, I mean, I know that the 2006 midterm elections were a big deal, and we were able to take back the Senate and the House. And or what did we do? Did we take back both? I mean, I know we gained all power in Congress while Bush was president.
Yeah, we took back both.
Okay. So,
right, Bob?
Was it both? Yeah. So hopefully that we can do that again. That would be awesome. But there is such a grassroots energy going on in this country. And in some ways, I'm really excited. I mean, for obvious reasons, I'm excited about it. That, you know, energy got us wins in Virginia, wins in Pennsylvania, wins in Alabama. There have been Connor Lamb. The part that scares me about this is kind of a little bit what I said to him about, you know, keeping that energy going, because people who are comfortable just feel like they don't care. They don't think they have to vote. It's inconvenient, whatever. I'm glad that we have the momentum
don't show
now.
Up. They're complacent. Right. Yeah.
Exactly. And then what happens is somebody like Trump can get elected. So, I really hope that I know that the pendulum is always going to swing, you know, in this direction for a while and then that direction for a while. And it's common for the midterms to go against the sitting president as far as, you know, ideology and party. So clearly, you know, that's something that has happened in the past. But I think what's different this time is a lot of people are waking up to how horrible things are, because this man who is clearly owned by Vladimir Putin, whether you believe that or not, you know, he's which obviously I do, but there are a lot of people who are either not informed or they don't necessarily believe that's the case. There are other issues that Trump is upsetting them on, whether it's race relations, bullying, you know, trade, North Korea. There's like just so many different things that are frightening us, and what this is doing is it's sparking energy, you know, in small towns across the United States. It's causing people who voted for him because they thought, for whatever reason, that he was going to do a better job than Hillary. It's causing them to say, maybe I was wrong about this, and I've got to listen to some of these, you know, normal sounding Democrats. You know, I mean, even a normal sounding Republican is better than what's going on with fucking crazy Republicans right now, who just don't want to hold Trump accountable for anything. And, you know, I mean, it's really frightening. So I just hope that, you know, I'm glad Andrew is running. I hope that he wins, and I hope that he and everybody else who wins keeps that momentum going, because it's so important.
Right. And, you know, these going back to the kids and how, you know, they've sparked this movement. And one of them said in her speech, I think it was Sarah Chadwick. She was practically screaming into the microphone because the her sense of urgency is palpable. Yeah. And she's right. But she said, you know, you don't change the way guns are accessible, or you don't bring about some gun reform, you politicians who are in office now, we're going to vote you out. We're going to vote you out. Because November, most of these kids, these high school seniors, are going to be old enough to do it. And there are enough of them, and they're being registered at the marches. They're being registered on their school grounds. They have sparked a movement that they themselves can change. But then it's up to us, you know, sitting back and saying, oh, we've had a great 8 years with Obama. And like you said, here's why Trump was elected. How many people didn't vote for Hillary Clinton that supported her?
Yeah.
We can't get complacent. We have to take it back. And we can't, you know, we can't just take it back in these midterm elections, but in 2020 and every year beyond, because we have a, you know, it's going to take a generation to repair the damage that he has done.
Yeah. And I think the first thing that we need to do is clean up our voting system so that there are paper trails. And, you know, we need to make sure that people, that there needs to be voter confidence. And that's one thing that Vladimir Putin and, you know, members of the Kremlin are going to work very hard to ruin in this country is confidence in not only in our media, but also in our whole system. If people feel that their vote doesn't mean anything, they're not going to vote. Prior to the Russian interference, that was already an issue. You know, there's already people running around screaming, A, both parties are the same, or B, my vote doesn't count. Those people are just being lazy. They are being lazy because they don't want to deal with reality. And the reality is that occasionally, sometimes elections are won with one vote. Sometimes it comes down to literally one person. And, you know, that's how you have to vote in every election. Vote as if you're that one person. And then the thing is that people also have to understand we're not going to win every election. So just because you go vote and we don't win, that doesn't mean, oh, well, that's it. It proves it. You know, you just got to keep going. It's every single day. People don't seem to realize, and I don't understand why, but, you know, I in my book that I wrote about voting for women, it's called American Woman, The Pole Dance, Women and Voting, I kind of likened America to a household, like a family. And that's, we're all living in this big house. And so, you know, if and America is the house. So if you take it to a real family and you've got a leaky pipe, you go fix the leaky pipe. Or if there are, you know, say five people in the house or X amount of people in the house, one person's going to want to have their TV up at, you know, 11 o'clock at night and the other person has to sleep. So there's got to be a compromise. All right, fine. Mm-hmm. You can watch it till 10. So we have to do the same thing as voters.
Yeah.
It's like Republicans want a certain thing. Democrats want something different. All right. We're going to have to meet in the middle.
That's called reaching across the aisle. Yeah. People.
And it's like,
this is called working together.
I know that. I mean, I was watching, I think it was Chris Hayes or one of the Matthews or Hayes or whatever. And they were talking about the idea that the far left progressives are seeing or seizing this opportunity right now to say, hey, we're going to go as far left as we can. And we're not going to give up anything. That kind of like the Tea Party did, which has basically ruined the Republican Party because they were absolutely not going to make compromises. And I think it's a mistake for people who are on the far left to assume that this is an opportunity to be seized where we can just go, the country is not far anything. The country is more centrist than anything, you know? So even though I'm pretty far fucking left as far as my, you know, I wouldn't mind if we repealed the Second Amendment. I'm not saying we should, and I don't even believe that we're going to, or it's even possible at this point, but I'm just trying to say for, you know, argument purposes, I'm extremely liberal. I think abortions should happen anytime a doctor feels it's necessary or if the woman wants it. And the rest of the people who have an opinion about it, I don't give a shit what they have to say. I don't care. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I'm so liberal, but I also realize that, you know, I have to share this country with people who like Donald Trump. And people who, you know, and if it's not Donald Trump, they like Mitt Romney or they like George Bush or whatever. So I get that. All right. Well, we're going to have to find a way that we meet in the middle and hopefully we can figure out a way to continue to advance. Because if we do meet in the middle and we're able to get some good things done, if we're able to upgrade education, I think that only leads to a more progressive country in the long run anyway. You know, I mean, we're always going to have conservatives. We're always going to have people on the right and on the left and all that. But I do think that when people are intelligent and when they're educated and when they're engaged and they're taught civics in school and they understand how government works, it leads to a more progressive nation, period. Even if we have conservatives, even if we have some conservative values, which I don't even know what they are anymore. But, you know, for the legitimate family values outside of bigotry, You know, because family values to me is just family. I don't say it has to be a heterosexual white family. You know what I mean? It's like,
oh, please,
it's
right.
Any family that you have, taking care of the family, making sure that, you know, people can afford education, homes, the American dream, all of it. Mm-hmm. I think it's totally possible in a meet in the middle, you know, scenario, but we have to do it.
Mm-hmm. No, so. you're 100% right. No, I agree. And you know, I love compromise. I love a heated debate, but I am someone who's willing to listen to reasonable requests and reasonable points of view. And I believe wholeheartedly in what you said, compromising, taking on another person's point of view and working with that does ultimately lead to, well, that's progressive in and of itself.
Yes, it is.
So that's pretty rad. Let's get there. You know, we have, I look at my children now, who are almost 14 and 10, and they're passionate people. You know, they live in Oakland. They've grown up, they've spent their entire lives living in Oakland to two very active, politically active and, aware parents. You know, we pay attention to these things and we discuss, news topics and political topics with our kids all the time. Mm. And I look at what the shit that they have to shoulder. And the fact that my little girl was having nightmares about gun violence, for two solid weeks, more actually after Parkland. Mm-hmm. And she has anxiety now and asks from her bed, called from her bed to my bedroom last night, "Mom, is the alarm on? Mom, is Zadie going to bark if an intruder comes, if someone with a gun comes to our house?" This is what little people are thinking about now. This is the world that we live in here in the United States. And I believe that Trump as the leader of this country, but as the person who's, you know, who the figurehead that's at the helm, you know, the damage he's done around just ignoring gun control reform and almost encouraging violence because he ignores it, because he fuels the fire of the NRA, because he fuels the fire of his base over the Second Amendment and makes it not a right for kids to just go to school and feel safe, but it becomes a political issue. Mm-hmm. Because of his fueling the racist, you know, agenda and giving license to anybody who's had sort of this underlying racist feeling, now he's given license to them to come out and hate blacks and hate on brown people and call Mexicans rapists and
say there are some good white supremacists out there.
Right. And say that, you know, they're taking from this country, they're welfare recipients, when that's just a lie. It's a lie, and it gives, you know, and that trickles down to children.
Yeah.
You know, so we have now a generation that has these things on their minds. And so it's going to take us, you know, standing up to that and teaching our, you know, the young people of America that, no, that's not cool. We're fighting now the same fights that people in the 70s were fighting, you know, equality. You know, look at Dolores Huerta, right? Mm-hmm. How long? That was in the 70s. Hmm. It is 2018, and those same fights are coming back up. We're fighting for equality and racial equality. And
God, you know, I would love to have 5 minutes with Emma Gonzalez and talk to her about the ERA. I would love to let her understand, you know, tell her that we don't have gender equality thing in the Constitution. But I can't necessarily get to her at this point. I am so pleased, though, to watch them. And, you know, I would like to say this. Steve Marmel tweeted, was it Steve Marmel? Or no, it was Michael Ian Black. I think Michael Ian Black tweeted out the idea that, you know, these kids are new to all of this, you know, new to the national spotlight. And at some point they may screw up. And he hoped that we would give them a break. And I agree, because this, you know, I mean, obviously politics is local, politics is personal. And, you know, activists, especially young activists, sometimes can get in over their heads in a way that they may say something that, you know, either is not necessarily politically correct or whatever it is, whatever mistake they might make. I do agree with Michael Ian Black, and I hope that they're not so harshly criticized, because they're already getting it from the right, who feels perfectly comfortable attacking children, which is just beyond me. I mean, again, with this whole bullshit conservative values thing, it's like your conservative values are attacking young children who are worried about their lives. I mean, I can't even imagine what it must feel like to be a teenager or a child in this country and worry that you're going to go to school and get shot with an AR-15.
Right.
I mean, I never, I had my own set of issues when I was younger. We had earthquake drills in California, you know, but never, not, I mean, I didn't grow up in the Red Scare, so I wasn't going, and I, or the nuclear stuff, so I wasn't going under the desk in case of a nuclear attack. It was always earthquake drills or fire drills. And I was so fortunate, because that was all I had to worry about. I didn't have to worry about some, you know, kid with mental issues sitting next to me pulling out a gun and shooting up my class. So, yeah, I mean, I'm very hopeful. These kids are giving me, and everybody else, I would say a lot of other people, a lot of hope. And the fact that Republicans are going after them is just heinous. Just heinous. Oh, my
heinous.
God.
The cartoons that I see, you know, yeah, it's ridiculous. But these kids, you know what? They don't care.
No, and that's what's so great.
They do not care. And they know they have the power, and they know they're speaking the truth, and they know that what they're doing is right.
Yeah, and so far, and, I mean, they've been so incredibly eloquent.
Oh my God,
that Emma Gonzalez just blows my mind. She, you know, all of them are amazing, but there's something about her that stands out for me. I think she's an old soul. And yes. I think she's, you know, going to go on to she and a couple of other young people were on Rachel Maddow the other night. And it was, again, she stood out to me. I mean, all of them are so eloquent and articulate. And it's clear to me that they understand what they're fighting for.
They do understand.
You know, I mean, and they're not, I'm sure their parents have said things that have rubbed off on them. But it's certain they're not political props. They're not, you know, actors who are just repeating words that they've learned. They're people who are frightened for their lives, and they have good reason to feel that way. I mean, you know, I'm just so glad. And what's also good about that is that hopefully by the time they reach retirement age, they won't forget the activism that they're doing right now, because that has happened to a lot of people. Like, for instance, my father, who is a Democrat, you know, has always been a Democrat, specifically because he was in a union. He worked for ABC News and he was in a union. And so Democrats protect the rights of union voters. So he decided that's where I'm going to be. And of course, he's also a liberal minded man. But I mean, a lot of his friends who grew up alongside of him are Trump supporters. So, you know, they used to be the radical left and protesting wars and you know, activists for the Democratic platform and all of that, Democratic view. Now they're all Trump supporters. So I just hope that these kids can hang on to what they're talking about now and not lose sight of that, not allow bigotry or whatever it is that may come up to win over, you know, for whatever may happen in their private. Like, I don't understand why or how somebody who was a liberal could ever have voted for Trump. I just don't get it. I don't get it. But, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about that because we're going to, I don't know if you saw Roseanne, but I did, and I have some thoughts on it in the next segment. And another thing, which we're going to switch over to in a second. But before we do, I just want to remind everybody you can support the show. You can find us on Patreon. Start me up on Patreon. We also, we're on iTunes and Stitcher, but you support us at Patreon. That's patreon.com. Just look up Start Me Up Podcast. And so whether it's $1 or $5, which will get you into our next segment. As I said earlier, we're going to talk about Stormy Daniels. We're going to talk about Roseanne. We're also going to talk about, what's his name? Kevin D. Williamson, who believes women who have abortions should be hanged.
Ugh.
And we're also, oh, I just want to let everybody know that I believe April 11th, we're going to have Scott Dworkin on.
Yeah.
Woo! It's going to be an interesting conversation. And then I'm also in the next segment going to talk a little about, give a little teaser about the first chapter that I wrote yesterday in my book, which is about a guy with a large part of his anatomy.
Yeah, baby.
Keeping it clean because Jans was on. Anyway, all right, we'll see you over at End Another Thing.